Thank you, New York. Today, we're reminded of the power of community and the power of coming together. Athletes, on your mark.
The first woman to finish for the second straight year here in the New York City Marathon is Mickey Gorman, a smiling Mickey Gorman, and why not? 2:29:30, the time for Greta Weitz.
Look at the emotion of Shalane Flanagan as she comes to the line, pointing to his chest, pointing to the USA. He so proudly wears across his chest. A great day for Mev Kozlowski.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Set the Pace, the official podcast of New York Roadrunners. I'm your host and New York Roadrunners CEO, Rob Simulcare, and today we're kicking off with a special announcement. My beloved co-host, Meb Kozlowski, he's been here since the very first episode of Set the Pace. Meb is going to be changing roles, stepping down as week-to-week co-host, but don't worry, he's still going to be sticking around. He'll be on most of the shows with our member moment interviews as well as our Meb Minute. But Meb, it's been so incredible having you with me. You helped us get this podcast off the ground last fall, and I can't thank you enough for everything you've done for New York Roadrunners, for Set the Pace. It's been amazing, and I'll miss having you on with me every single week.
Rob, it's been awesome to be with you and the New York Roadrunners to work on this podcast, Set the Pace. It's been an amazing experience for me, but looking forward to hearing you. And Bex, obviously, is going to be the leading on that, be able to join you. So I'm looking forward to be on the other side and listen, but I'll be lucky to be able to share my Meb Minutes with you guys. So I'm very excited for the opportunity as well still.
That's right. And you mentioned it, so I'm going to hit it hard now. The exciting news of who's joining me as co-host going forward is Bex Gentry, who so many of you already know and love. Bex is, of course, an incredible instructor on Peloton. She's been involved in New York Roadrunners broadcasts as well, the marathon and half marathons. And she's such an inspiring person, a great runner in her own right, and someone who's literally inspired hundreds of thousands of people to run through her work with Peloton. So I know Bex and I will have a lot of fun doing the show together going forward, but Meb, you won't be far away. Obviously, you'll still be around. I'm sure we'll call on you from time to time to jump back into the co-host chair. But my favorite thing about co-hosting this show with you, Meb, is seeing the reaction of the guests when they get to talk to you. You know, so many of them are just in such awe of you. And we, even when it's just online, we usually tape these shows on a virtual platform. So they're not in the same room with you usually, but they still, their eyes just widen at the chance to talk to the one and only Meb Kozlowski. So our members will still have a chance to do that during our member moment segment.
Rob, it's been such a pleasure to be able to just enjoy and see people's reaction. It's such a, been a great platform for me to be able to share my experiences and Set the Pace and to see the reaction of our guests, to be able to just, because running is so relatable, and here we'll be able to chat about running and be able to just share some knowledge. And for me, what a unique opportunity to get to know them and express my gratitude with, to be able to share the experience of running and then also what jobs they have. So especially behind the scenes, you know, be able to just kind of share those moments has been very priceless for me.
All right. Well, that will continue, obviously, as Meb continues to do our member moments and our Meb Minutes. So look forward to continuing to hear Meb here on Set the Pace. Well, we've got a great episode ahead of us today. It's Earth Week. And so in honor of Earth Day and Earth Week, we're going to focus on the intersection between sustainability and running. And to do that, we'll be hearing from a woman who really has carved out a space as a leader in that sustainable running area, Tina Muir. She was once an elite runner in her own right from the UK, but her book, Becoming a Sustainable Runner, has really set the pace, if you will, for what it means to be sustainable in our sport of running. So Tina will join us in just a little bit. But before we get into that, we want to celebrate everybody who completed the TCS London Marathon this past weekend. We know that many of our listeners were out there on Sunday. We saw some great performances across the board. Meb, we'll start with the pro side of things. And we had three former New York City Marathon winners, Marcel Hug with a fourth consecutive London Marathon win. Also, Catherine De Bruyne, she won in her second London Marathon. And the women's open division winner, Perez Jepchichir, She set a women's only world record with her win at 216.16. She won in New York in 2019. So Meb, some former New York champions doing some great things.
You know, one race leads to the other. So to have those great, amazing athletes at the TCS New York City Marathon means what they're going to do in the spring. So we saw the results there. Amazing, incredible races. And for Paris Kipchoge to break the women's start world record, which Miss Mary Keitany was the 217.01, who had women's, you know, women's only, no pacing, no men, to be able to be there to break it. And then Paris Kipchoge ran 216.16, which is incredible. But also on the same token, that Tigisti Assefa from Ethiopia was 216.23, only 7 seconds behind. And 1 second behind was Jocelyn Chepkoskai, 216.24. And, you know, another Margaretu Alomu, 216.34. What a racing that was in London. And this is just a tune-up for what's going to happen at the, you know, Olympic Games, possibly whoever gets selected, or a replay again, and then possibly in the fall in New York, possibly could be. Those are amazing women racing, women-only racing, and to have the world record there means so much to everybody.
Meb, meanwhile, the men's open division winner, Alexander Mutiso Munyeo from Kenya, finished in 204.01 in his first ever London Marathon. And we also should give out some love to Set the Pace, former guest and former NHL player, the great Zdeno Chara. He finished the London Marathon just 6 days after running the Boston Marathon and had an incredible time. I think it was about 3:11. So Big Z, as they call him, is getting better and better at this marathon running thing. So congratulations to him, to everybody out there who completed London. It's the back-to-back Boston-London thing, Meb, really fascinates me. I know a number of people I saw on my social media who were able to pull that off. And you can't do that as an elite runner, but I guess some of the more kind of, you know, everyday runners are able to do it. And I just, honestly, I can't comprehend it. I don't know how they do it.
Big shout out to Big Z. I got a chance to speak to him at the starting line of the Boston Marathon, you know, and to have that in the Set the Pace podcast. You know, he told me that his goal was, I asked him what his goal for Boston. He says, well, to be able to be very strong, but my big focus is going to be in London, try to get close to 3 hours as possible. And he ran 3:30 and with that great smile in Boston, and then came back 6 days later to run 3:11. It's just amazing what he has done, and embrace the endurance distance running for him. So what a big shout out to him, and congratulations on job well done. And he's creeping a little bit closer to 3 hours. So it's going to be interesting where he goes next.
It's incredible. It really is. I mean, it's almost like Boston for some folks was like a training run to get ready for London. And then he really laid it down on, you know, what is a flatter course for sure. And it was a tough day in Boston. The weather conditions in London were perfect. So everybody, congratulations on completing London. And for many of you, edging one step closer to that 6-star. Some of you actually got the 6-star medal of Abbott World Marathon Majors in London as well. Congratulations to all of you on that incredible accomplishment.
I want to give a big shout out to Kenenisa Bekele, who ran the United Airlines New York City Half Marathon in March, where he ran 103.59. But that was a big tune-up race for him. He was seventh place on that race, but he came second place running 204.15 at the London Marathon at 41 years old, which is breaking the master's record. So that now, is he going to be in the Olympics or not? That's on the Ethiopia's committee decision, but that was a huge, huge run for him.
That's true. Coming up later in the show, we're going to get to hear from Meb about his sustainability tips for our Meb Minute. And stay tuned for our member moment today, where we're going to get to hear from a New York Roadrunners member who has firsthand experience with one of our many plogging events throughout the city. Don't know what plogging is? Stay tuned. We'll tell you about it and tell you how to do it with our member moments. Today's guest is a returning friend of the podcast, as well as a friend of mine and of Meb's, Tina Muir. And for those who don't know Tina, she's a former elite runner, an environmental activist, and the host of the Running for Real podcast. She's also the co-author of Becoming a Sustainable Runner. She works with major marathons to help runners think about their environmental impact, including our very own TCS New York City Marathon. Tina, it is great to have you back on Set the Pace. How are you?
I'm excited to be back, and I'm doing pretty well overall. Thank you.
Well, you're doing pretty well considering what just happened. For those of us who follow you on social media, we know you went through a major surgery last week for your Achilles. That's a tough one. Achilles injuries are really hard. Yours was one that I guess had been built up over the years of running. How was it? How are you doing?
Yeah, it's weird when you ask me, how am I? And a lot of people are saying that. The answer is I am good. The first few days, especially, I slipped on the second day and my body went into shock. That day, I was not doing well. But beyond that, you know, I feel like Meb here, but I'm grateful for my body, for how it's healing. I'm grateful for the people around me. I'm grateful for my surroundings. I feel like Meb, that's something that you would say, but it very much is true that while I have this rough thing, I can't put any weight on my leg. I do need help with literally everything right now, but I feel good. So yeah, I'm recovering well, and I guess we'll see. I don't feel like I'm in the tough part yet when I really have to come face to face with the rehab. So we'll see.
Tina, great to have you back on the podcast. I know Achilles is the engine for our body to carry us through. What was your mental status to say when you go into the office of the doctor? How were you feeling?
really depended on the hour. So I was in Boston Marathon. I saw Rob that weekend. And that weekend, I was so distracted. I had so many things going on. I had people to see. I was really enjoying myself. And then Monday night, it hit me like a ton of bricks. I just suddenly realized what I was about to do. I panicked, really was just in a very much a fight or flight state for about 15 hours. And then suddenly I felt calmer. But then when the doctor starts explaining, I'm going to, you know, sorry for anyone who's squeamish, this is your warning. I'm going to cut your Achilles. I'm going to pull it open and fix it. It's hard not to realize how big of a procedure you're going through when, as you said, Achilles is, I mean, it's the critical piece of your body in terms of running and in terms of daily life. So definitely had some meltdown moments.
You know, Tina, the Achilles is very sensitive and very terrifying. I had two incidents where I had a mishaps, or I think it was 2002, 2001, when acupuncturist was going to put needles around my Achilles. I said, no way, I refuse, and left. And then the other one was during my only DNF in the marathon in 2007, London Marathon. And I was getting ready for the trials. Just hearing the terrifying of Achilles injuries, not let even surgeries, just kind of scared me. I stopped at mile 17 or 18 saying, I can't risk it to have a rupture. But for you, is it the reason for your surgery, just longevity or why you have used, or what was behind it?
Yeah, I mean, I've always been someone who doesn't believe, very much like you just said there, I don't believe in running through pain for the sake of being tough or the sake of just getting it done. If something is really wrong within my body, I've always believed in doing something about it, taking time off. And that's why I feel in my elite career, I was able to mostly avoid big injuries. But this is Hägglunds deformity, which is actually becoming quite a common injury. Where your heel basically builds up extra bone over time, and that bone rubs against the Achilles. And so I tried many conservative methods, but it just got to a point where I just couldn't get going. I would start building up my training, and then I'd get set back, and I'd start again. And it just got to the point where I thought, if I want to do this long term, I need to get this taken care of. If I want to try and grip my way through it and show how tough I am, then I'll keep running through it and likely get to a point where it's not only affecting my running, but it's affecting my daily life. And that's where I decided to make that choice.
Tina, you obviously ran a lot at a very high level, and that's how you end up with something like this. When you at this stage decide to have a surgery like this, are you hoping that it's going to help you as a runner, or is it just more, I just want to be able to walk, right, and kind of go through the day to day of life without pain? I mean, so many runners go through this kind of decision at some point, right? And sometimes it's about the running, sometimes it's just about life. Which was it for you?
I mean, I think it was a bit of both. I am someone within my running, but in life in general, that if I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it. And the, I mean, Meb will understand this. Like, you know, I've got the, I used to run 90 miles a week plus, and I was fine with that. And then when I couldn't get above 50, which I understand for the average person listening, you're like, that is a lot of miles. Like, don't say only 50 miles. But for me, that wherever I could not get above that, that was a point where I said, this is not, I don't want to live like this, where I can't do anything beyond that. But also it was getting to the point, I have a three-year-old, where my three-year-old would run towards me and I would instinctively put my right leg in front of my left leg, just in case she kicked the spot that hurt. And I don't really want to be living like that. I don't want to be hobbling around after runs. So yeah, it was, I would say it was primarily for life. You know, I want to be a sustainable lifelong runner. And it became clear that this was the way to allow me to do that. And yes, to also allow me to achieve some running goals that I still have.
No, sustainable life. We don't want to make too much of a jump, but at the same time, that's what your new role is as an advocate for sustainable environment. Can you tell us how you came into contact after being an elite athlete?
I mean, it's something I'd always been very passionate about. I remember hearing about acid rain in Scandinavia coming from the UK when I was a I don't know, maybe 11 years old, and thinking that's not okay that one country is polluting another country. And there's many moments along my life where I remember mentioning it and talking about it. And I did a paper for it in with my master's about food sustainability in the food systems. So it had always been there. But in recent years, a friend encouraged me to speak out publicly about it. And as soon as I did, it felt like people had an appetite for that they wanted something that they could do to make them feel like they were doing something, without it being call up your senator or go vegan tomorrow, something that made them feel they could be a part of the movement, not feel ashamed for what they couldn't do. So kept building from there.
Tina, you have talked about your running career and a little bit of burnout that you experienced toward the end of it. Mm. How did your running life, the way you kind of ended your competitive running career, how did that influence what you decided you wanted to do afterwards, and this brand you've created, this, you know, call it niche or you know, real thing you've got around being a sustainable runner? Is it sustainable in more ways than one?
Absolutely, yes. I like to look at sustainability from a holistic sense. That means myself as an individual. That's why I took this choice of surgery in getting my body to where it will be able to do what I want it to be able to do. That also means from a community perspective, surrounding myself with people, you two included, who are, you know, believe in making change and pushing forward things that are important to them. And you know, being a part of a greater community, as well as the environmental sense of sustainability and what we can do to be better environmental stewards, to be more conscious of our decisions and how we are considering future generations with our choices. So definitely like to pull in all three areas to consider when it comes to sustainability.
You know, as you transition from athletes to real life is very difficult, but you kind of seem to have found your niche, and especially with your co-author, Zoe Rome, becoming a sustainable runner. Was that idea always behind you, or did it come as you transitioned and you got that advice from others?
The environmental piece was always there. That was something I always felt was going to come into its own at some point. But the as Rob, the first half of your question, the previous question asked, I think it was really once I left running in a state where I just hated it. I despised it. I wasn't sure I would ever run again. That I knew if I was going to come back into this space, it had to be different. It had to be with joy at the center, not, you know, finish lines and times and my worth only being what I was able to accomplish. And so that piece of it came into itself as people really noticed the difference between my face running before, when I would be, you know, eyes on the road, very serious, very focused, you know, very intense, and the joy that I had in the second part of my running life, that others said, how do I get to that? And I wanted to help them with that.
Having done all those great works, how gratifying was it for you in 2023 with the New Balance Bronx 10 mile where you were skirt from disregarded materials such as bar and gel wraps. Can you discuss the feeling of that? How enthusiastic were you coming to Congress and getting attention to it?
And by the way, like, you got to check out this skirt if you haven't seen it. You can follow Tina on Instagram. What's your handle, Tina?
TinaMuir88.
Yeah, so check it out. You got to see, I think it's your profile photo, if I'm not mistaken. You got to see this this dress made from recycled materials that she ran in. There's no way to describe it other than just to see it. So go check it out. Tina, to Meb's question, what was it like to actually have that moment?
Yeah, well, I mean, I wore it there and I also wore it in the marathon for 10 hours. So last time you talked to me when I was with Kaylee and Sandy, I'd worn it then and I was very impressed that it held up very well. It's ready to continue. It doesn't need any repairs yet. So yeah, it actually bothered me a lot less than I thought it would. There are some, in addition to wrappers, and by the way, this dress was designed and made by a slow fashion designer named Natalia Trevino. And she must have done an amazing job because not only are there wrappers and gels and things, but there's also plastic water bottles hanging down. And I was convinced one of those bottles was going to get stuck between my legs and I'd just be like banging it around between my knees, but it really didn't. Somehow it just kind of naturally ended up being quite smooth and I barely noticed it. I will say though, with the Bronx, it was really funny actually because I got put in B Corral. Because of my past, I always get seated near the front. And so no one really noticed. And then I was like, why did no one really pay attention? And then it dawned on me, the B people are going for a time. They're trying to run hard. They're not paying attention to anyone else.
That's true.
So it also taught me, if you want to make a statement, go further back where people are actually like looking around and enjoying themselves, because in B, no one even really noticed.
You are so right about that. That is exactly how it is up there near the front. Everybody's really focused and they're not seeing anybody but their watch. So that is true. You know, Tina, I want to talk about your book and like what it means to become a sustainable runner. You know, mm-hmm. At Roadrunners, we have a great director of sustainability at New York Roadrunners, Ali Criscullo, who Tina, I know you know. You know, we're doing things, you know, waste management and, you know, we're working on the carbon issue as well. There's a lot we're doing, but I still feel like we're so far from where we need to be. Mm-hmm. So from your perspective, let's just talk to the runners and what it means to be a sustainable runner. What are the few things that you think people should focus on if they want their running to have a positive or at least not a negative impact on the world in which we're running?
Yeah. Well, I think the first thing I want to mention is the fact the book is called Becoming a Sustainable Runner. We intentionally chose that word. It isn't the sustainable runner. It isn't how to be a sustainable runner. Because we are not at the finish line. None of us have this right. Not even Greta Thunberg living out in Sweden does everything because she can't, we can't. And the reason we chose that was to take that pressure off people of if you try to be perfect, if you try to get everything right, you're going to feel like a failure and you're just going to give up in exasperation. And I think that applies to races too, in that I know with New York Roadrunners, like you said, you still have a long way to go, but there's obviously so much there that needs to come together for change to happen. And I think runners sometimes struggle to understand that it can be a click and it's done, but it's not, that's not the case with any race. And just to the listeners, I want to say that there are always pushes going on behind the scenes, even if you don't see the outcomes yet. So I just want to clarify that for anyone listening. But in terms of the individual, I people don't like this answer because it's kind of a cop out. But the thing I would say is to talk about it. Like, be it you go to a friend's birthday event and you say, "Hey, rather than buying you another gift, you've been talking to me about how much extra stuff you have lately. I'd rather not buy you another gift because your house, you already said you feel stressed by the amount you have. Can I donate to an organization on your behalf?" Or you could, you know, a kid's birthday party, you could do this the same thing for the children you're going to. You can say to a friend, "I'm bringing, I'd like to host a I'd like to come to your house. Can I bring a meal, bring it in a reusable tub, bring your own silverware so they don't have to wash up, take it home? How can you have conversations with people around you as often as possible, even if they're as basic as, can I bring a vegetarian burger that I really enjoy to a cookout? So I think that's the number one thing I would say. Same with reaching out to your local races. Same with supporting initiatives that are already being put on. Any way you can use your voice, your literal voice, to say you appreciate, you notice something, you want to see more of something, that is what I would say is the biggest key to this.
Tina, what are some things you're seeing runners do out there that you think others might want to know about in terms of just being more sustainable for each of us? I know there's things like reusable cups that are becoming somewhat more popular, or, you know, choices people can make about how they get to races, or or what they wear, or how often they wear it, or what they do with their used running shoes. Like, what are some of the things you're seeing out there that give you some enthusiasm and think and hope that they'll catch on?
Before I do that, Rob, I'm going to flip it back to you and ask you to say, can you share with us what the policy is around carrying your own fuel with the NYRR events?
We have a policy now where you can bring in a water bottle. It can have fluid in it or not. There is a size limitation to it, but it's a reasonable size, one liter, exactly. And that's as much as anybody I know would want to run with anyway. You can have belts around a pair of shorts or something like that, or a belt with the little containers, or one liter container. So you can do that. You can come in with liquid and then fill that as you go right along the course. So that's definitely one thing that I think is not only sustainable, but actually as a runner, preferable for me to have something on me that I know what it is and I can sip it in a more controlled way versus those little cups that I'm generally pouring half all over myself anyway when I try to drink them, you know, with my friends in the bee corral, Tina, who are all going for that time, right? That's one thing that I like.
Thank you. So does that mean, Rob, I got a commitment from you, a verbal commitment just there, that anytime you race from now on, you're carrying your own fuel?
Well, longer than 10K, yes, okay. Definitely. Because
Deal, I'll take that.
10K or less, I don't really take that much fluid. But yeah, longer than a 10K, absolutely.
Okay, got it. And then in terms of, I asked you that because I think that is one of the biggest things that gets me excited. Seeing the percentage of runners who are carrying their own fuel, who are recognizing, and Meb, you can maybe speak to this, how important it is to have your own fuel that you have worked with throughout your training cycle versus using what comes on the course. I actually really think that is a performance benefit to have a vest or to have a bottle. If you are not fast enough to be an elite who has your own bottles, to be able to have what you've trained with and practice with, I really am getting excited by the number of runners who are saying to me, I carried my own handheld, I wore a vest with a bottle in the front, and I didn't have to stop for water or for fuel, and I ran faster because of it. So that, I think, for me is one of the biggest things I get most excited about. And I'm hosting more and more plogging events, including at New York Road Runners and many other races, and I'm loving seeing the kind of people that we're getting turn up to these, big influencers, big people who can push change in their communities. And I think that will push the messaging along. So if someone listening can attend a plogging event, which is picking up trash while running near you, I highly encourage you to do that too.
That's a great one, Tina. And I think, you know, for the elites or others that can run a marathon, having their own special drink is such crucial and such important. And you can, you know, this thing sometimes control what you can control, right? And sometimes you can't control what other drinks are there on the course. So to say that carrying a couple things like a belt or whatnot, it is important. You don't have to carry maybe water you might get on the course, but your special fluid could be something that you can carry. Yes, I think plogging is huge, I think, but how do we transition to be an example for this elite runners to do that? Maybe it's on recovery days or long runs, maybe the last mile or two while your teammates are running the last 5 miles or something they can do. But how do you see that transition to possibly have a wavelength, to say the least, to pass on the torch to other elite athletes or former elite athletes to be involved in their community.
Yeah, no, I think that's such a critical piece. And Meb, you've seen that for yourself, that while you might be out there in front with the elite world most of the time, there's a lot of similarities between elites and everyone else. There's a lot of community that you can feel with the recreational runners who really make the running community what it is. And so I love seeing when elite athletes get involved with their community, do things to give back. I think elite athletes, you know, events that are hosted in the few days before, you know, rather than having another panel, could they suggest to a group or somewhere like the Run Center to have, hey, can I be involved in a picking up trash event? Can I be involved in an environmental conversation? Fiona O'Keefe is very passionate environmentally. I've had a lot of conversations with her about what she can be doing, how we can be pushing this movement along with the kind of recognition that she has got going into the Olympics. And I think the biggest thing that elite athletes can be a part of is pushing the brands. They have a lot of power when it comes to the brands that they are working with to say, hey, it's really important to me that you use recycled materials or in your products, or that you keep developing a shoe that is more circular. So I think for elites, I love getting involved in the community, but I also think their power comes in utilizing the contacts they have, the pull they have in those moments to really push the brands to keep moving forward in that way.
Tina, you talk about your book in kind of four parts. You say you want it to be a few different things. Part go get it, part let's slow down, part here's how you do it. So that's the instructional. And then the last part, find your own path, which I like. So how does that relate to someone? What does that mean? And what can someone kind of take from each parts of that message?
Yeah, I think runners, we can definitely get a bit in over our heads, get excited, be like, I'm going to do this right now, and overcommit to something or really get too invested in something. And then when things go wrong or when something comes up or when we miss something, it can be very easy to say, well, I'm not going to do that anyway, move on to the next thing. But instead, recognizing that we're human, we make mistakes, we're not going to do everything perfectly. We are going to need to find ways to blend this new thing that is important to us in our life, not just kind of shove it in and hope that it fits. And then we also are going to need to give it time to adjust to the way that we are living before we are really going to start to see how it's going to impact others, how it's going to make us feel more cohesive and like we are part of something greater than ourselves. I genuinely believe that that is the way to stay in the sport. And I, you know, I'm sure Meb, you can speak to this in the, if you are only focused on what you achieve, then running can feel very hollow. But if you build out more in ways that you connect with others, with the community, with the sport, with the activity itself, that's what really makes it a lifelong something that you want to be involved in.
Absolutely. I think the park and rec community, running communities that are in your locals is such an important, maybe it might be three times a year, but that's three times better than it was last time. So life is a marathon. I think we have to be able to be patient, but at the same time, consistency and then also routine is important. I think we can reach to our local clubs to say, hey, you know, every at the end of the month of the quarter, maybe four times a year, to just say, you know, it's going to be sustainable movement to be able to help do that. I think that's very important. But I know for me as an elite athlete in the past has been always the park and recreation, whether it was in San Diego or in Tampa, or people kind of walk and run, be able to pick up trash. I always said, thank you for doing this, because and it's very important. I think call to action is probably important, but I think spreading the word to your recommendation, Tina, is just huge. But more importantly, how do you focus, you know, but at the same time to be able to just pass on the baton? Is it social media? Is it other things, meet and greet things, and then be able to just do, instead of shake out run to what you said and then go do action speak louder than words to be able to do that, pick up things and material. Is that what you like to see from elite or former athletes?
Yeah, I think a lot of it just involves dipping your toe in the water, getting involved, taking the courage to show up the first time. I really find with a lot of my events or just environmental action in general, and I felt this way too, the first time, particularly for elite athletes, you speak out about this, it's going to feel terrifying. You're going to feel like your sponsors are on the line. You're going to feel like people are going to, you know, the trolls are all going to come out and yell at you and blame you for things that are completely irrelevant. And I've had a lot of nasty comments given to me over the years, but I've been pretty bold and aggressive in the way that I've spoken about it. And I knew that was part of the territory. But I think once elites do speak out or do something or show up to an event at all, it kind of speaks to itself. Like, for example, last weekend in Boston at my plogging event, Mike Cafuzzi, or Cafuzzi as he's known, is one of the main influencers in the running space right now. He has shown up to many of my plogging events, and he said that on his video after the race that he found plogging relaxing during that weekend, that his weekend is so hectic and crammed and running from this shakeout to this event to this panel to the next. And the plogging event, he found just a grounding experience. And so I think in many ways it will speak to itself, and it will bring to athletes' lives if they just take the opportunity to, you know, put your ego aside and say, yes, I'm going to go pick up trash, or yes, I'm going to speak to this because I do feel scared about my future and I want to do my part. Or joining a organization like Protect Our Winters, who have ambassadors. That's another thing that people can do. I think taking the first step is the scariest part.
Yeah, you know, in conversations we have internally at New York Roadrunners about what to do to be more sustainable, there's a phrase I use, Tina, you've probably heard me say it, which is don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good, right? Yep. Don't get so stuck on, well, we could do that, but that's not perfect, or someone's going to criticize that, or, you know, it's not enough. Okay, well, one thing will never be enough, but one thing is better than zero things, and two things is better than one thing, right? If you just keep moving in that general direction, it's a lot like running, right? I mean, you're not going to get there with one step.
Absolutely. And I think that very much applies to every element of our lives. We can apply running in so many ways, but particularly with this one, I said earlier about perfection holding people back and why we chose the word becoming. And that very much is the case. It's, as you said, the small things, even if make absolutely zero impact on emissions, they get that seed planted, they get that ball rolling, they get that person feeling confident in the decisions that they're making. So take that step, even if that step for you is remembering to take your reusable bag to the grocery store. You're trying, and that's what's
possible. God, Tina, can you help me with this? So I bring my bags, they're in the back of my car, right?
Yeah, that's the
and
place
I, and
keep
I
them.
So they're always there, and I get to the store and I go in there and I do my shopping and I get to the checkout line and I'm like, oh my God, why did I leave them in the car? I never remember to take them into the store. And now sometimes I just stop the cashier and I'm like, would you mind? Just give me like a minute. I'm a runner. I'm going to run out to my car, get the bags, run right back. I promise I won't hold you up. Like what kind of trick do I need to remember to bring these bags into the store?
I mean, that's usually my suggestion, is keep them in the car. But if you have them in the car and they still don't make it into the store.
I'm a special problem, clearly.
One other suggestion I like to make for people is to put, when you know you're going to be going to store, put the A bag on the handle of the door. So when you go to open the door, there's a bag there. And for you, maybe that when you're thinking about going to the store, you go put the reusable bag on the door handle, which reminds you, grab the bags out of the back, put them on the seat next to me.
Something like that. Or just put them in the passenger seat if I'm alone. Like I need something to make it so easy that I can't screw it up.
Uh-huh. But that's okay.
I had a similar issue, Rob. I was, especially when I was living in California, I was always in the trunk. But then what I learned to do is put in the back seat or put it by the passenger side. And then you definitely would see it as you close your car.
Mm-hmm. All right. This is good. This is a real problem in my life. So this is actually really helping me.
You're not alone.
Hopefully somebody else out there listening has the same problem. So that's good. Tina, changing topic a little bit. The last time you were with us on Set the Pace, it was, of course, to celebrate the amazing run of Kaylee Williamson at the TCS New York City Marathon. You have been her and her mother's kind of chaperone, their guide through running these long races. And that moment, which to me is 100% the best moment that I've witnessed in my year and a half at New York Roadrunners, when Kaylee crossed the finish line as the first known woman with Down syndrome to complete the TCS New York City Marathon, was so special. And your role in it was so special as well. She has since gone on to run more. She ran the United Airlines NYC half in March as well. What has that journey been like for you? For those who don't know, how did it start? How did you first get connected with Kaylee and her mom? And what has that meant to you?
Yeah, their friendship means so much. I mean, Kaylee is just pure love. I mean, anyone who has had the absolute honor of having a hug from Kaylee knows exactly what I'm talking about. She just gives you everything. There's no hold back. There's no concern with what do I look like? What are people going to think? It was really beautiful to see in the half what she, just being with her, did to me, because the half marathon instead of the marathon, we were able to feel a bit more relaxed that we've done this. Kaylee's had done 20 something marathons, half marathons, sorry, at that point. And so I knew we were going to be okay. And I found myself going along the course, singing at the top of my lungs to Barbie and all these songs with Kaylee, having no concern for what I looked like, what people thought of me. I recorded videos of myself singing, put them online, which I would never normally do. But there's something about Kaylee that just allows you to just totally be yourself. And it is beautiful to see everyone around her and how that impacts her in that way. We met through a mutual friend who said, you should have Kaylee and Sandy on your podcast. I fell in love with both of them, stayed in touch, met them in person, and then from there, when they had an opportunity to go run Boston, I said I'd love to support you, and you know, that turned into me being there with them. And I've loved seeing how they've been celebrated. Kaylee loves to have crowds and cheers and people high fiving her, so it's just amazing to see someone so just pure love.
Well, Tina, I just want to say you have found a balance and sensibility in life, as you have done great work with just environment and Kaylee, to have that joy to bring to the world. You live in a big difference to make the world a better place. What's next for you besides the plug-in and other things going on? What should we look forward to you?
Yeah, that depends how my leg heals up. I would like it to be some trail and ultra races in my near future, but who knows? Yeah, I think running-wise, it's funny actually, when I was having that pre-surgery appointment, they said, "What do you have a race in mind?" And I was like, "What are you trying to do to me?" Like, no, I don't have a race in mind. I put that in my head. so no, I have no race plans in mind as of right now. I'm going to see how my body recovers, but I am the sustainability director for the World Road Running Championships in San Diego, your place, Meb. So I'm very excited to be working on that. That's a major focus for me, and I'm going to continue to keep trying to get runners to believe that they are a part of the solution, that they can be, the people that push change, even if they feel like their impact is minimal, it matters. So I'm going to keep on planting those seeds, both literally and metaphorically, I think.
Well, we love it. Keep doing what you do. We love getting your advice on how we can be better at New York Roadrunners. And everybody out there, make sure you check out Tina. Her book, along with Zoe Rahm, is Becoming a Sustainable Runner. So much to learn there. So much to learn by following Tina on Instagram as well. And once you're healed up, Tina, we know you'll be back out there plogging away. Can't wait to see that. And nobody better to have on this week of Earth Day than you. So thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Beth. Appreciate you.
Now it's time for today's member moment. And this week we have joining us from Buffalo, New York, Dennis Brinkworth. Dennis is a sustainability advocate who has attended multiple plogging events put on by New York Roadrunners and was inspired to take those events back home to Buffalo, where he puts on his own plogging events at the Buffalo Marathon Expo. Dennis, for those who are not familiar with the term, let's tell them exactly what plogging is. By the way, welcome to Set the Pace, but let's talk about what plogging is because it's new to a lot of folks.
Well, thank you. Yeah, plogging is an activity where you actually run and pick up trash along the run route. And it came from a Swedish term, plogging. I can't remember the exact terms that they did, but it was a combination of picking up litter and running, thus plogging came out. So it's a really fun activity, and it gives people the opportunity to get some exercise and pick up trash.
And Dennis, I've been introduced to plogging since I joined as CEO of New York Roadrunners. I've had a chance to do a few plogs. We actually hold them from the Run Center on 57th Street from time to time. This week being Earth Week and Earth Month, are you planning a plog up in Buffalo this week?
Well, actually, not this week. We actually are focusing on the our plogging event at the Buffalo Marathon at the end of May. We just did a plogging event last week in a neighborhood called Larkinville, which is an up-and-coming neighborhood in the Buffalo area. And that's how we kick off the spring with that plogging event. We had, I think, about 40 people showed up, and we plogged in the neighborhood, and we also incorporated a walk into it as well. It's funny, my wife joins me on the plogging runs. She actually works for Roswell Park Comprehensive Cancer Center, running their tobacco control. And she does a program with Tobacco-Free Western New York, where we focus on cigarette butt pickups. So we have two, we kind of have another element to the plogging run, where we have runners focusing and picking up trash and walkers picking up cigarette butts, which is the number one litter item in the world. So to digress 2 seconds, Rob, my wife, my son, his girlfriend, and my daughter, we all did the plogging event with Allie and you in New York at the half marathon, which
I remember it well.
Yeah.
It was great.
Windy, but great. Yeah.
Yes, yes. And, you know, the plogging, Meb, I don't know how much you've done it, but it requires some skills. You know, you got to run with a giant bag that gets more and more full with trash as you go. There's a lot of bending over involved. Obviously, you got to get down to the ground to pick up the trash. So, Meb, have you plogged much? What's your plogging experience?
Not a whole lot, but my wife is one of those people. When we walk the girls to school or go on a run, she'll be, you know, lean over to get those trash. But, you know, it's very important to keep our sustainability to get going. And I think I've done once probably with a community in San Diego, the beach cleanup day. But also to just Dennis, how did you start, you know, from a long runner, being able to run? You were probably one of the first ones to run by yourself, and then to get 40, 50 people to join your club and then be able to do plog.
Well, that's a good question, and thank you. We actually, it's funny, the local Saucony rep suggested to me this activity called plogging about 4 years ago. And he said, you know, it's very brand new to the United States. I operate a very large run group out of here. And he goes, we'd love to try with your run group. And I was like, sure, because I actually, you know, we run along the Buffalo waterfront here a lot. And what drives me crazy is the amount of litter that I see every weekend. And to be honest with you, continually every weekend. So I said, yes, let's do a plogging run. And we changed our at regular run to a plogging run, promoted it, learned about it. I went online, learned about how you plog. And we had instructional videos. We had how to plog handouts. And so we actually incorporated it right into our run without much idea, without much, how do I put it, planning of how it would, the outcome would be. And our first plogging run, we had about 65 people. I believe we collected over 70 bags of garbage. And it turned out to be a great event. And thus then we decided to incorporate, we do about 4 or 5 a year in the Buffalo area. And then again, Rob, to you and what Allie has done with the New York Marathon sustainability programs, I read about the New York Marathon and I immediately called our race director because I work for a local brewery that sponsors. We do the beer for the run. So I said, you know, I have this New York Marathon is doing this great event. It's really, you know, beneficial to the community. It gets the Buffalo Marathon involved in a different area where you're actually cleaning up. And Greg Weber, the director, was like, let's do it. And we did it. So it all, you know, kind of came to being from an idea from a rep that has turned into one of our biggest activities up here.
Thank you, by the way, for the shout out to Allie Crisculo, our director of sustainability at New York Roadrunners.
She's been great. She's actually helped me. And I go to New York a lot for work. A couple of my kids live there. So I met her at your offices and I was so impressed. But what I was really impressed with is how the New York Roadrunners really take sustainability to the next level. I've run all the world majors except Tokyo. I've run a lot and I have never seen a race organization so committed to sustainability. And bringing in Tina Muir, you know, you really go all out for it. And that's what I would tell you is my motivation out here in Buffalo, and you know, in a much smaller marathon. But you know, we're going to take a page from your book, and you know, you do them at the halves now. I'll fly in to do those, and we're going to start doing them at different races as well.
I love it. It's great, and you're starting it in another community where it is needed. So it's great. Okay, Dennis. So for folks out there listening who have never plogged, can you give them some tips on how to start, the do's and don'ts of plogging?
Yes. One of them is you don't have to pick up all the garbage, nothing sharp. That's the one thing that I really try to tell people. And, you know, over the years, we've had people bring in a tire once, a big steel object or metal object. Plogging is really simple. It's really wear loose clothing, your regular running clothing. In most cases, the gloves will be supplied, or if you go on your own to plog, wear some gloves. That's important. I will tell you something I've learned out here is a smaller, medium-sized trash bag, preferably recyclable. But we learned that bigger trash bags are, if it's windy or something, are just hard to carry. But, you know, get a trash bag and really, on your normal run route, try it and see how it goes. And what we always ask people to do in particular here is get a couple friends and get a small group and start plogging. And you'll see the difference immediately. And, you know, the one thing as well is once you get the hang of it, then maybe talk to a local race director or run group and get them to do it. There's a group, Rochester, New York, is about 60 miles east of us. And a Rochester run group just started doing plogging runs. And we think that's kind of a neat idea. So we're going to actually contact them. But, you know, it just go out with your friends and try it. It's that simple.
You know, my favorite thing about plogging, Dennis, has been the random thank yous that you get from people who see you doing it, right? And they see what you're doing. They notice, wait, this group is running down the street with trash bags and, oh, they're picking up trash. And yes, they just yell, thank you, out of nowhere, which is great. You know, you don't get that when you're just out for a run on your own.
No. And Rob, exactly. That's one of the most gratifying things you see a lot. But I was really noticed it in New York City during the plogging run during the half. It was really incredible how this community support people were just coming out saying thank you. And as you know, you can collect a lot of garbage and people were really supportive of it. That is a gratifying moment of plogging for sure. You know, the one thing that I will tell you that I actually briefly talked to Allie about too is, you know, with what you guys do and everyone does, we all plog and really are enthusiastic about cleaning up the community. But what really drives me crazy is the next day the garbage is back. And this is where, I mean, New York, everywhere, there's garbage cans everywhere. And to me, the next level of what you do with the New York Roadrunners and what we're going to try to do is how do you educate the person or educate the people in the community not to litter? And that's where the big challenge is. And we're going to try to maybe get little signs along the plogging route, just people awareness, you know, like with my wife with the cigarette butts. I mean, that's the number one litter item in the world. People probably don't know that. And, you know, we're just trying to, I think that's the component of plogging that we all should really look at is how do you educate the public? Because it really is, it's not disheartening, but it's frustrating when you run around and you clean it up and you bring it, and now the next day there's garbage. So on that note, I love doing it, and but I think we have so much more to do, and it's something that I think is going to be my new passion.
Hey, Rob and Dennis, I just want to say thank you to you guys. I've seen people do that, whether it's here in Tampa or San Diego, or especially even the park and rec, to always say thank you to those people who are putting the work. It means so immeasurable to be able to just kindness, like you said. I just see them. I'm not doing it, but I say thank you very much, and they kind of get surprised. Oh, we're doing something great. So yes, love the great work that you guys are doing.
Absolutely. Thank you, Meb. And thank you, Dennis, for everything you're doing, spreading the practice of plogging from Sweden, where it started, to New York, and now to upstate New York. And thanks for everything you're doing. Thanks for being a New York Roadrunners member. And we will see you at the next plog in the city.
You will. Well, thank you guys very much. I appreciate the opportunity and the time. It's a pleasure meeting you all.
All right, Dennis Brinkworth, our member moments. Now it's time for our Meb Minute. And Meb, this week we are all about sustainability with Earth Day taking place. And so I'm curious, how does sustainability play a part in your running currently? And do you have any sustainability tips for folks out there who are looking to make a step toward becoming a more sustainable runner?
Absolutely, Rob. And Tina Muir, who's been a big advocate for the sustainability, is huge. We all have to do our own part and encourage others to do the same. For me, when especially this year, getting ready for the Boston Marathon, I had my gels and trash and be able to just take it with me, or a water bottle and that you can dispense at halfway or something. Keep an eye, hide under the tree. And then when you're coming back, when you stop in, just drink what you need or take the gel that necessary for you and look for the next trash and have it in your pocket and be able to just throw it away. But also make wise choice, you know, and parenting as carpooling to go for my run. I remember when I was in Tampa, when I first moved here in Tampa, Florida, University of Tampa, Coach Drawer, I wouldn't drive my car. I would just carpool with them to be able to go there and be able to just and be able to be part of the environment friendly. And if you're traveling, you know, be able to just do a carpool with somebody is very important. And obviously use your voice to be the best advocate for this, because we all need it to be conscious of what we do, especially as runners. We want to know what the benefit is for us, but also we want to know how we can help the earth to be friendly to us, because whether it's a growing tree shade or be able to just oxygen is so important. And be able to share those are important for others. So for me, it's been very important to have sustainability as much as I can, even before it was like, okay, here's my biker or next to me in a car and throw it. But as become everyday athlete, you can do a lot more yourself.
All right. You know, one of my favorite things about running is, for me, it actually is a substitute for other forms of transportation sometimes. In New York City, especially, where there are so many places you can walk, if I'm in a rush, I just run. You know, I try not to run too hard if it's a business meeting or something. I don't want to show up all sweaty. But it is a great form of transportation. I think that's underrated sometimes, how great running is as transportation to get places.
That's very useful also at the airport, Rob. You know, be able to, when you're running late for a little bit, it never has to be conditioned, you know. And I have done couple runs through the airport myself as well. So be conditioned, have a good sustainability, be friendly to the earth, and you can have a great things in life and share with others.
Runners, we never miss our flights or our trains, because we are fast. We get where we need to go when we need to get there. Everybody, happy Earth Day. Hope everybody does their part to keep our planet livable, not just this week, but every week going forward. And that does it for another episode of Set the Pace. Want to thank our incredible guests this week, Tina Muir, the sustainable runner, Dennis Brinkworth, the plogger, for joining us today, and Meb. One last giant thank you to you for everything you've done for Set the Pace. I know you're going to stick around. We'll keep hearing you, but thank you again. We're going to miss having you every week. I love you, buddy, and can't say enough good things about what great things you've done for the podcast. So thank you.
Thank you, Rob. Thanks to the broadcasting for the podcast. So I've been fun to work with you guys. I'm so delighted, and I'm pretty sure I'll see you here and there. But good luck with everything that you guys are going to be doing. And with Bex, you are in great hands. She's very loved, and it's been an honor to have her as a guest. So looking forward to do great things.
Can't wait for Bex. And if you want to send Meb a thank you note yourself, guess what? You can do it as a review. That's right. You can subscribe. You can rate, leave a comment for the show. Thank Meb. Say hi to him on whatever platform you're listening on. This helps us find others to listen to the show as well. Everybody have a great week. We'll see you next week on Set the Pace. Enjoy the miles.